G7.
Number 27A.
Come now to the level of Christian Science. We have done all the other levels and see how can we find the laws ruling here in the level of Christian Science, especially if we consider the four sides of the holy city that is intertwined into that level. Again, remember, and the pedal note of that level is the, so to say, the relationship between truth and error, between whatever is the opposite, be it spirit and matter, be it soul and sense testimony, be it life and death. All those opposites have to be weeded out and have to be corrected, and the level of Christian Science has as its purpose, as we know, this correcting office to see that there are not two in being, that being is one, and that we have to do with the oneness of being and not with the duality. We see that very first law in the word. We have the word, and we depicted it as the law of creativity. It's also called the law of divine illumination, perhaps. Let there be light. You know, the law of divine illumination. When the first light breaks in into our consciousness, what happened to that little light that begins to break in consciousness? How does it evolve? How does it develop? That is the question of the creativity. How the creativity here is, so to say, the resolution of ignorance versus intelligence versus knowledge. How does the light destroy darkness? How does knowledge and intelligence destroy ignorance? That's the creativity and the law that reigns on this level. And we also have called it the law of ordered evolution. You can see this exemplified very clearly in the days of creation, that in the days of creation we have really that word of God through the 7 days, through the seven synonymous terms, showing the ascending path, so to say, from that very first inkling, let there be light, until the light expands and develops, and we reach finally the seventh day of fulfillment, where we can say now we have gone through all the steps of the law of creativity. Now that's a law that you know now, so to say, inside outside by heart. We have been talking about it since John Dolby's time, since the 30s or even before. We have considered really, so to say, exclusively the days of creation, the 7 days of creation, the seven synonymous terms in the world order, and I've spent many decades on this fundamental cornerstone of the whole building of Christian Science. So I don't have to lose much words on it, not explain it very very neatly and specifically. I can, so to say, rely on the fact that you know this order. It is the order, just generally speaking, that brings us out of darkness into the full light. So that is the relationship between darkness and the full light. What is it that brings us out of ignorance into the knowledge of God? Again, this is a step-by-step unfoldment. This is not just one step that one says, well, instead of being ignorant, I have to have all the knowledge in the world. You can't do that. It is an educational process. It's an unfolding process. And as I said earlier, I said that at the beginning, when John Dolby was teaching us the science of Christian Science, we spent, so to say, years only with those 7 days of creation because we didn't have any other instruction. Only after that, that the enlightenment came in a rather progressive way, in an accelerated way, and year after year something new had been seen. It was again an exponential growth in our understanding. So fundamentally, we have to understand really the word order. What is God? And the answer, yes, God is, and gives the definition of God through what we call the word order. Again, a little footnote, which I always am aware of when speaking with the students, that we must have a clear terminology. When we speak about the word order, we speak about the word order as it appears on the level of Christian Science. When you are on the level of absolute Christian Science in the word, of life, truth and love, this we would not call the word order. The word order is all the seven synonymous terms as we have them really on the level of Christian Science. And that will apply also to the Christ order and then to the Christianity order and the Science order. Only then, when we take in all the seven synonymous terms, really we should use the terminology order. So word order, Christ order, Christianity order, Science order. Okay, that's a footnote. Now, the word order, as we know, starts out with let there be light, let there be mind. And we can see that coming out of ignorance, we can see that this is a terrific step. Let there be mind, one mind, capitalized mind, the divine mind. Let there only be the divine mind. This is a terrific step, but Mrs. Eddy said, this is the point at which I discovered really Christian Science. That in the sixth chapter, she tells us that her discovery was first that she could see that in place of the human mind, that discovery would show that there is only one mind, and that is the divine mind, the all-in-all of mind. Now, if we would only have that step to make, we would not really see the whole of mind, therefore not the whole of the word order. What is more necessary than just to see that God is mind, that is the first step? Is this mind really the only reality or not? That's our second question. And so we see that she has to define that one mind also as spirit, because spirit is that which says, I am the only. So the all mind becomes the only mind in spirit, so that there is no other mind besides this divine mind. And so my thought goes further to spirit and sees, so from this point on, I have to see that there is only one mind, and that only, the term only, really signifies that God is spirit, because only that which is of the nature of spirit can be all and the only, that has nothing besides itself. Then, if we have that, our thought still does not know what that mind really is. It's just one mind and the only mind. But what is it exactly? Can I define it? Can I see the identity of it? Can I see really the form of it? And so I need to see more than mind and spirit, namely I must see also soul. The term soul, capitalized, stands for God and means identity, means the inner identity which never changes. So I get to that point where I see, oh, that's wonderful, mind is spirit. It's the only spirit, and that spirit never changes. It's something that doesn't come and go, for instance, that it remains through eternity, that one mind and spirit. And so we begin to see that it's of the nature of soul, of unchangeableness, that it has an identity which does not deviate from itself, remains what it is, and so I get a very secure feeling that if I stand on the basis of mind, spirit and soul, I have such a secure basis that nothing can shake it anymore. That's why mind, spirit and soul, Mrs. Eddy would call really the nature of God, because I have established the nature of God, on which I can operate, on which I can advance, on which I can really go forward. So I found my principle. So we see that mind, spirit, soul become now our principle. And so we have a fourth synonymous term that is principle and shows you should take for your activities, for your life experience, you should only take that one principle, which is mind, spirit, soul. So I get already another synonymous term, namely principle, which says I operate on that basis of mind, spirit, soul. I operate on that basis, namely as life. When I operate, then it begins to live. As long as principle doesn't operate, it doesn't live. It is stale, it is stagnant, it is stabilized, but it's not dynamic. So what is the dynamic of that principle? It says, well, my dynamic is that I bring forth myself as life. That's life. That's true life. Whenever I rely in my activities, in my consciousness, on the divine principle that is mind, spirit, soul, only then do I bring forth true life, the truth of life, the newness of life. Constantly something new, something else. This is an adventure of life. And so we feel we cannot stop with principle, but because principle has to operate. So therefore, what does it operate? It operates, namely, as life. So whenever I build in any situation on mind, spirit, soul as my principle, then that is true life. And if I do that, naturally, then something within me has still a question and says, but where is that true life? How can I be conscious of that true life? How do I know that what I live is the true life? And so the synonymous term truth enters in and says, God is truth, God is consciousness. You are conscious of this eternal principle based on mind, spirit, soul, operating as the true life. You are conscious of it. You know what you know. And so we become conscious of it. The plants are not becoming conscious of it. The animals can't be conscious of it. It's only consciousness that has evolved all through those 5 billion years or 3 or 4 billion years has evolved, has become consciousness. That's unique to man, and therefore we can see that truth, consciousness, is a further synonymous term for God. I know what I know, whereas the plants and the animals don't know what they know. But man has consciousness, and that's the consciousness of truth. They can distinguish between truth and error. They can do that because they have consciousness, and because their consciousness, divine consciousness, is a derivative of that truth that is conscious of itself. That's a great point that we see even in treatment, that we know that the patient knows what he knows, that the patient knows his right manhood, that the patient knows his right form, his health, his harmony. He knows that truth. We can't say truth is just somewhere. It's just up in heaven with God, or that here and there is somebody who knows truth. We have to see that truth knows itself, and therefore the whole universe is aware of itself, is aware, is conscious of its own truth. So the patient is not always that ignorant man, that ignorant woman, that ignorant situation, which does not know what the truth is, but is always knowing, and he knows that he knows. And so finally, when you come to consciousness, you begin to see something, and you say, then in this case, my consciousness is the same consciousness as God's consciousness. There is therefore a unity between God's consciousness and my consciousness. And so therefore you feel that there is only one thing at work, and that is what we call love, namely the unity of principle and men. That principle and men are one, that they are not two propositions, somewhere a God, somewhere a man of the universe, they are separate from each other. But having stated that reality is of the nature of truth, God is conscious of truth, man is conscious of truth, there is only one consciousness, and so I come together, and so you have the seventh day where nothing is made anymore. The seventh day has no more a creation in itself. It has no more on the seventh day God created, but God rested in his work. So that you have a wonderful sense that love is that top synonym that says all is one. God and man is one. Yes, that's one way of expressing the word order in its ascending way. When we come out of ignorance and have to explain the nature and essence of God to somebody who does not know it, then we can lead him in that creative way up to the oneness of being, oneness of God and man. So that law of creativity is a fundamental law, and we can also see that this law of creativity is all over the place. That whenever something has to be done creatively, from nothing to something, we can go along that way of creativity. And starting out with mind, with that mind which begins to know and knows what it knows. And goes on. I don't want to spend too much time on the world order, because that's something that you know and have studied many times. I much more like to give more time to the other orders, because I see in life that the other orders are not so well understood as the world order. And that is naturally a pity, because those four sides are equal sides that should have equal importance and should be understood equally and not just as a side effect. So I go to the Christ order, which I call the law of translation and retranslation. It's called that way because the Christ order, as you know, you have in that passage on page 115-16, where Mrs. Eddy gives a tabulation, chart-wise, so to say. The only time she charts out something is that scientific translation of immortal mind, and then afterwards the scientific translation of mortal mind, which is the retranslation back into mind. So in that scientific translation of immortal mind, she has 3 points first. Namely, at the left-hand side, she has first the term God, and then talks about God, and then comes man, and then underneath comes idea. So when we ask ourselves, what has that scientific translation of immortal mind to do with reality, then we see it must have to do with that sequence of God, man, idea. Meaning that it shows the translation of God to man, that's the Christ. So we can hear very easily the Christ translation, because Christ we know as the divine message from God to man. It's always that where God comes down, so to say, to humanity, to Israel, to us, to each one of us, to each situation, and has as its purpose what? As its purpose to bring out the idea. So the third term there is idea, and so we see that Christ translation must have something to do with the translation, with the mechanism of the translation of God to man. So it is something else than in the world order. In the world order we were stepping up the ladder, so to say, from the first synonymous term up and up and up to the point of love, where we say, now I have a full definition of God, But in the Christ, we have an order of the seven synonymous terms in a different way. You know it. It is that she explains there God as divine principle, life, truth, and love. She starts out with principle, not with mind. That is life, truth, and love. And then the translation through soul, spirit, to the point of mind. So mind is the last one. Whereas in the world order, mind was the first one. So you can see in these two orders must lie a very great spiritual significance. Namely, that those two orders here, as far as we have considered them, have different purposes. They are not doing the same thing. They have different purposes. The Word has the purpose of defining the wholeness of God. The Christ has the purpose of how the divine principle, God, translates itself to the point of individual idea. This is the translation which is then depicted through that order of principle, life, truth, love, and then through soul translated to spirit and mind. Now, before one is practicing these orders, one has to be aware what one is practicing, because we are not practicing through the Christ order when we have a creative problem in front of us. That is not adapted. If we have a creative process to be solved, then we go to the world order, because the world order is the creative law. If we have a sense of that God should translate itself to reveal to us a specific idea, we are not going to the world order. Because that question which we have put is a question of the divine mind reading. How on earth does God translate itself until it is manifested as a clear idea of mind? So this second order I can always somehow see is not often applied, not often practiced. And yet it should be one of the orders that are of great significance. Because in practice you always come to the point where you feel, well, God should, or the Christ should, translate God to the point of the individual case. And so if we just say, well, the Christ is that operation that translates God to men, we take that in such a summary way that it has actually no deeper value in it. The deeper value is when you sit back quietly and contemplate that flow of the Christ translation, the seven synonymous term in the Christ translation. And perhaps because it is God coming as a terrific power, as omnipotence, really to every situation, wiping out and wiping away everything that does not belong to that situation, you get really a sense of terrific power. That's why I always somehow compare it with a natural symbol, with the Niagara Falls. There you get that terrific sense that water just comes and with terrific power just drops down and nothing can withstand it. I have never seen a fish going up the waterfall. Never seen any boat going up the waterfall. It's so irresistible that it just doesn't work. Well, in life practice, it is so that we feel there are always quite irresistible factors at work. Mortal mind is at work, false concepts are at work, unwillingness is at work. You feel so much opposition that goes against the acceptance of the Christ. So it is of great importance that we go through that Christ order step by step and see how each synonymous term, so to say, is doing away with opposition. Until finally there is no more any opposition And so the idea is brought out in its clarity, in its fullness. So let's go through the Christ order. And just think that sometimes when you have a problem and you go through the Christ order, that this may be a terrific help in your consciousness, that you get free of the sense that the Christ manifestation could be resisted. So the order is principle, starting out with principle. Well, principle is here really that enormous potency, that omnipotence of principle that has within itself all the authority laying latent in that principle that says, I'm the only power, I'm that terrific big potential power that is right at hand to express itself. I always somehow have the picture there of an electrical power station. Is that okay? An electric power station that is built into a big dam and holds a whole lake behind it. That lake is still, it's full with water. That's potential power. Though it doesn't do anything at that present moment, it is a terrific potential power. That then is, and that's principle, latently there as an authority in being, it's there, but if you don't go further, if you don't open your gates, then the water doesn't flow down to the generator and becomes operative power, dynamic power. It becomes life. It is a life power then. Only then really that potential power is translated into living power, into operative power, and says that principle is not only principle, it's also life. Therefore that power is always expressing itself in a very living, powerful way. Bringing it to truth, and says, and then we can see that that living power is a consciousness power. I can become conscious of this power of the Christ that is constantly operating as the life power. And so I feel the potency of consciousness that comes in, that potency of God's consciousness of himself as truth is acting on the situation. It's acting on the situation as love, namely as that which wants to save. It's not a question, will God save me? Will God help me? Will God hear my prayers? It is in the interest, in the very intention of God, that God is love and wants to save and wants to help and therefore applies itself to every situation where that help is needed. This is, so to say, the preparatory stage for the Christ translation, that we see what is actually at work. We have not yet seen how it works, but we have first a really subjective sense, the divinely subjective sense of that tremendous power that is latently there, that expresses itself through life and becomes consciousness so that we know what we know, and that is of the nature of love, that we know that that love wants to do everything what is possible under the earth to save a situation. Now comes a transitionary period, namely it goes on to soul, spirit, mind. And that is then showing the mechanism of how that power works.